Welcome to the Government Technology Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Langen. By putting mobility first, the Department of War is redefining how it trains, plans, and operates. In this episode of the Government Technology Insider Podcast, we explore how a mobile-first approach is transforming military readiness and efficiency, enabling full desktop capabilities through secure, portable devices. And in part one of this two-part series, Brian Shromsky, who's the managing partner for 5G public sector at Verizon, and Todd Maxwell, who's the director of regulated business development for Samsung Electronics America, share how the Department of War is overcoming long-standing challenges around mobile device usage in the field, strengthening readiness and flexibility, and using 5G connectivity to deliver full desktop experiences through mobile devices. They also discuss how security is built into this mobile-first model from the ground up to keep sensitive data protected even when operations go dark. I hope you enjoy our conversation. And Brian and Todd, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Matt.
Absolutely. It's great to have you both. And let's start off and talk about challenges. So what are some of the biggest challenges the military has historically faced, especially when it comes to usage of mobile devices in the field? And we'll go with Brian on this one.
Sure, Matt. And great question, as always, leading out of the gate. You know, when we look at challenges in the military in particular, they've always used mobile devices, right? They use different field communications, land mobile radio services. But what we're talking about here is the ability to take a mobile-first strategy in terms of cellular communications, right? And what we've seen over the years, it's always started at, I would say, certain levels of the military branch, right, having access to that. But what we've seen over the last couple of years is mobility is going mainstream because of twofold. One, prices have come down, which is awesome. Two, we see the military branches in particular designed because the next generation and the service men now are coming into the branches are younger. And they actually live in a mobile-first world, right? So a lot of the internal applications, a lot of the recruiting applications are designed for smartphones. So it's a natural progression to take what is on the outside of the military and apply it inside to the military. So we're very excited.
So, you know, Brian hit it on the head. There's several advantages to the workforce getting younger, right? They're used to mobility. And what some of the other things we're seeing from the endpoint is they're trying to integrate all this technology together, right? They want one device that they carry with them, like on their personal life, that goes from work to field to deployment, right? And so utilizing a device that can use LTE or a private 5G or that LMR P25 or tactical radio when they're deployed is critical. So they have that single endpoint. And so being able to have that secure device and have that ensure that security of data in transit and at rest while they transition from LTE to non-terrestrial networks is really important. And we're starting to see a lot of interest in that. And it's been a great opportunity for us to partner and work together with different leaders in the industry to come up with a solution to that problem.
All right, great. So how can moving to a mobile-first approach to help enhance readiness, speed, and flexibility in both, say, training and operational settings? And you know what, Todd? We'll stick with you on this one.
Great. I think that's a great lead into something that we're sort of passionate about. We've seen a lot of emphasis on mobility and endpoints like mobile phones and tablets. But we're also starting to see interest in wearables, right? Because not every single person needs to have a endpoint mounted to their chest, which or on their duty belt, which we see a lot of running situation awareness tools. But we could start looking at deploying quick, easy, freestanding devices that go right on the wrist that connect over LTE or potentially satellite in the future, right? That provide the same sort of situational awareness and information back that allows a team to work together to see where each other is at, but not having to provide a whole endpoint like a phone or a tablet. So the options that we start to see out there and the price points are starting to vary to allow teams to do this and the military to deploy this type of technology. What we also start seeing is for years, the professional athletes have had these core training abilities. And they mimic a lot of what the military training and the law enforcement training academies do, but they have tools that have been optimized for peak performance training. And so we started looking at how we can incorporate mobile technology to help the military and law enforcement training academies optimize their performance for battle readiness, and utilizing some of these wearables and endpoints to monitor their biometric sensors to get that peak performance and offer that to them, similar to what we do in the sporting world, has been really interesting and exciting. And I think as you tie all this in, anytime you can start introducing that technology at a training academy, build that muscle memory, it goes towards them deploying it successfully out in the field.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, along those lines, you kind of answered my next question, but we can go a layer deeper. So if you don't mind, can you share some more examples, really, of how delivering a full desktop experience through mobile devices supports mission planning and execution in the field, kind of like what you're talking about?
Yeah, you know, this is a great tool. You're using a situational awareness tool on an endpoint, right? You have that option that we talked about a little bit earlier, where you could download your data, your mapping data, have it directly on your mobile device mounted to your chest, or if you're a flight in a helicopter or a plane, you could actually have it on the knee board on the tablet. But you would have your situation awareness tool, you have your mapping, you'd see where all your teammates were, you would see potentially where enemy are, you could have different pullback zones and other information directly there. But one of the great things about mobility is you can then launch into like a wireless DEX mode where you have a large monitor and you're in the back of a Humvee or an SUV and you're doing your mission planning right from your phone, drawing up the mission that your team will go out. And then if you have other operators are coming in, maybe a joint response to either a natural disaster or a military event or something like a Super Bowl or the Olympics that are coming to the United States or the World Cup. You can bring multiple different agencies, military, federal, state, local, all together on one situational awareness tool, and then what we call federate them together, allow them all to communicate, share location, share issues, share SOS data, share staging information. And even if you don't have devices to hand out, you could look at some of these wearables, lower endpoint, where you still have a dot on the map, you have the biometric sensor. Now you have a whole operational view allowing you to collaborate and cut down on some of the other types of tools you might need. So I really see mobility moving towards that is providing a tool, right? We never want to provide more gear on a MOLLE vest or on a duty belt. We want to provide them a tool that will reduce the amount of gear they have to carry or increase their efficiency. And having a device that you can go from field to vehicle to office or barrack is really a way to bridge that gap and give them that flexibility.
Thanks, Todd. That's a great summary there. So how does 5G connectivity support this shift towards mobile-first military operations? And we'll go with Brian on this one.
Sure. The one's obviously near and dear to my heart. We see tremendous usage of our users, and specifically in the military, as well as all federal government, right? But the computing power with these next generation devices, when you couple in AI, the demand on the network is exponentially increasing, right? Because we see the amount of data that is being processed, anything from aircraft maintenance to base security perimeter, where you start factoring in things like 4K, 8K video. It's just a huge demand on our network, right? And one of the things I'm very proud of and what the DoD specifically has done, they have set up what is called the 5G cross-functional team that we meet with quarterly, where their whole mission is actually to promote 5G usage as well as coverage along over 750 military installations just in the United States alone, right? And they want to know what we're doing as well as the other carriers because they see this technology as a game changer for their particular personnel. It is literally an arms race, if you will. So having good, reliable coverage, both inside and outside the fence line, is paramount to the Department of Defense. And we're very excited.
A lot of this data, right, as we're doing situational awareness tool, there's so many things that are out there, drones, CCTV, video feeds coming off helicopters or airplanes, and being able to funnel that all through a single software platform on the endpoint and then distribute it out over that 5G network is going to be critical, especially when you look at some of these natural disasters that happen, or these large-scale events, or even border security operations where you have federal, state, local all collaborating in one event. Being able to share some of the sensor data and the video feeds and CCTV feeds all over that 5G is going to be allow some amazing connectivity and data sharing.
Thanks, Todd. Yeah, you kind of touched on this a little bit, but really security is obviously paramount, right? So how is security baked into this mobile first model? And we'll go with Brian on this one.
What we are buying and ultimately building actually meets the needs, our own security standards, but also security standards for the military branches out there. And we work closely with them to adhere. So if it's anything from DISA and their guidelines, as well as working with other federal agencies, for instance, CISA, to actually make sure that we adhere to the standards, as well as 3GPP standards, industry standards. But also, I think what is very exciting that all the military branches, as they adopt zero trust architecture, it's actually company, mixing and combining what we bring to the table. But more importantly, it's the security posture and architecture that that particular military branch has adopted and is pushing out, right? And we've seen this only grow, obviously, since February and return to office or RTO, where we see a lot of military bases moving their personnel back onto base and not teleworking as much. And that will still continue in the future. But the way they actually do this and actually adhere, and then more importantly, having robust security from a network provider is critical, because those users were in a secured space on the military installation. A lot of times they were conducting their work in a home environment, right? So you can imagine the angst or heartburn, if you will, that security officers, the men and women monitor these networks would have. But I think they've done a very good job responding to the pandemic and actually taking a lot of those best practices and made them standard operating procedures as they had developed a more mobile-first work environment.
Okay, thanks, Brian. So I'm sure there are times when units need to go dark. So with that in mind, how can mobile devices remain functional and secure without really broadcasting signals? And we'll start with Todd on this one.
We really take this seriously. We look at all the types of security that we can put into our devices. And that really led to us taking something like our hardware supply chain and creating a unique ability where we call it's called a hypervisor device manager. A lot of people didn't know what that was. So we started calling it hardware device manager. But because we manufacture and monitor the hardware that goes into our devices, we can actually control it below an operating level. So if you start thinking about a compromise like Pegasus or other ones that can mimic you going into airplane mode but still transmit data, that's an OS hack and issue that's being utilized. And if we look at how we do it, we are actually going below the hardware and turning off your RF, your LTE, your Wi-Fi, your NFC, your RFID level at the hardware level itself. So even if the OS is compromised, it's not allowed to interfere with the hardware level. And we've actually tested this with U.S. Marshals and several other agencies to ensure that this works. And if you already look at our security profile, we've done a lot of different things with Android in our Knox platform and custom ROM. And everybody used to think that our competitors were more secure because Android was open platform. But yet the things we've been able to do with Android to create tactical edition, which is used by our operators in the most dangerous places in the world, and NATO and the Five Eyes. And then you look at our devices and how they're used in the top secret facilities, and only our devices are used there, or where the largest majority of devices, 95-97% utilized in that facility. So you really start to see that perception of security important, right? I know Verizon and Brian do this too. You create this collaborative nature with your end customers and take that feedback into your security profile that you're building. And that's really, we have advisory councils and federal mobility working groups that provides that feedback, and great working relationship with the Department of War and SOCOM and other agencies to get that feedback. Because what we do here really affects global because of our U.S. military, right? We are so involved in NATO and the Five Eyes. A lot of the technology we utilize for military deployment or law enforcement deployment is adopted by other countries. So what we do here has to be secure, has to be able to go abroad and withstand any security threats that happen.
Awesome. Thanks, Todd. Brian, anything to add to that one?
Yeah, I would say, you know, in those times where comms may go down, I think one of the things we're very excited for, and we publicly announced this, is to encompass other technologies into phones, similar or smartphones, if you will, and smartphones by Samsung is integrating satellite services, right? But there is no cellular coverage. The individual, especially huge in the military applications where they're in remote test range here in the United States, they can use satellite comms directly to that Samsung device and actually transmit data as well as text and soon to be voice as well, which is really cool, right? On top of, you know, other technologies, they're also built to that device, such as Wi-Fi as well as Bluetooth, right? So having the ability to actually integrate multiple mediums of transmission into an iconic device is paramount, right? Because a lot of the intel or the artificial intelligence is trying to run different algorithms, needs the data from these particular endpoints. So having various ways to communicate and get that data back to the individuals that need it, I think is a win-win all around.
I might add on to that, that just having that satellite capability is going to be huge for U.S. operations, right? And you imagine, like I mentioned earlier, the Olympics or a Super Bowl or a World Cup, being able to go from LTE to satellite, depending on where your coverage is, and then having that option internationally, depending on your security profile, or to go from LTE to satellite to going dark, right? Because your mission can't have an IMIE in a foreign country, right? Those options are just going to be fantastic. And I can't wait to do more on that across all of our mobility platform.
Thank you, Brian and Todd, for joining us today. And big thank you to our listeners for tuning in. And stay tuned for part two of this conversation, where Brian and Todd will share how AI is being used on mobile devices to enhance situational awareness and decision-making in the field. We'll also explore how wearables and IoT technologies are expanding the mobile ecosystem and improving the user experience for service members on the ground. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest best practices, lessons learned, and proven strategies for leveraging innovative technologies in federal, state, and local government, be sure to visit us at governmenttechnologyinsider.com. I've been your host, Matt Langan, and until next time, so long.